With the pandemic blame for increased separations and divorce, what happens to the pets when a couple or family breaks up? The Family Law Act determines property division and the care of children, but there's no specific provision for the ownership of pets, and animal rights advocates believe that there should be. Lawyers typically steer clients away from arguments about sentimental property division, including family pets, believing that the best solution is one that the kids like and the different parties can agree to, like pets accompanying children on their stays with other parents or parties with no children negotiating pet sharing arrangements. So what is in the best interests of all involved? Carol Pages is a family lawyer and joins us now. Carol, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Carol, so what? I mean, where do you start with this kind of thing? I mean, if a couple has a dog that they've bought together for it, let's start if they bought the animal together. Where do you even begin in that sort of negotiation?
Yes, it is. It can be complicated. There is a legal provision under the Act that pets are considered property, and so the way forward is, I guess, to understand what the legal position is, but. The best one, I think, for everybody is usually a practical solution, and that's what's worked for most people. So with the pets being considered property under the Family Law Act, it means that ultimately if it ends up before a court can make an order to decide who gets the pet, or can even make an order that the pet be sold. So if it gets to court, there's been a few cases, and one in New South Wales is an example. The parties had agreed for everything in their property except for the dog, and that was the sorts of things that the judge looked at. So who bought the dog? In this case, the husband had, but the wife said that it was a birthday present. They looked at things like the bank statements showing who paid for the expenses for the dog. In this case, it was the wife. They looked at who and where the vet letters and bills were sent to, and it went to the wife at her parents' house, but the husband argued that he lived there as well. The registration wasn't a big determinant in this case, because although the husband had registered the dog in his name, it was only after separation and when this dispute had started. So there was quite a lot of evidence if it does end up in the court, and in this case the court did award their possession of the dog for the wife. So, about
which on the balance of probability sounds fair, given what you've just told me about that story. Does that change if pet ownership was if one of the partners owned the pet before they came to the relationship? Is that a mitigating factor?
That would certainly be relevant. Yeah.
So okay, what do we need to do to actually try and make this more reasonable and make it easier?
So the main thing I would suggest is to avoid arguing about it in court. The family court's obviously very busy with property disputes and parenting matters regarding children, and the cost of bringing a dispute like this to a court would be enormous, like just with the evidence that was considered in that case, you know, years of bank statements and so forth. A lot of people get advice from a lawyer as part of their overall matter, but I would even say, you know, limit as possible the time that you spend with a lawyer on this, because again, the legal costs could quickly escalate. Sometimes the family dispute centres can assist the ones that do lots of, you know, mediation for property and parenting, but the sorts of things that I recommend to clients and that have worked successfully, where the parties are able to organise visits for the pet with the other party, and obviously that will work in situations where ongoing contact with the other partner won't pose any issues. So, you know, for example, one party takes their dog for a walk on the weekends. A really popular one that I've seen is that the pet or the pet joins the children between houses for visits. I've seen this work for dogs and cats and even rabbits. And I can tell you that my own daughter, I am divorced and remarried, my own daughters arrive every second weekend, four girls and one cat from their dad's house. So, and that does work really well. So, and because the other thing people have often got to consider at that time is that sometimes their living arrangements can be temporary post the separation. So, for example, one party might remain in the home while the other is, you know, renting temporarily and may not be able to house the pet. So,
yeah,
that's when the weekend visits would become more prominent.
But I imagine this points to a broader problem with the family law system, doesn't it? I mean, because it's not just going to be pets that, well, I mean, we know that there's often disputes over property and the like. There has been in recent years, a review into the family law system. Has there been any real changes or any positive movement in that regard yet?
About animals? Or about...
Well, in general, about, trying to tidy up the system overall.
Yeah, it's a very busy system, and they obviously very complex, you know, property matters get there, very complex parenting matters get there, and, you know, they're doing the best they can. You know, through the pandemic, everything moved pretty quickly to online, which has been working well. As a user of that system, that's what I would say, but, you know, as far as including pets into proceedings, it's quite rare, to be honest, and I think it's mainly because of the cost.
Carol, I know they say the lawyers always win, but I don't envy your position.
Thanks
for your time this morning. Carol Pages, family lawyer.